Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
This is Bewilderbeasts, an infotainment show dedicated to inspiring curiosity for all ages by investigating the ways animals intersect at humanity. I am not a historian, an ethologist, a researcher, a scientist, a zoologist, a trained audio engineer, or an expert in, well, anything. Y'all, I'm lucky if I can remember to put my clean laundry in the dryer before it gets funky. And while I make every effort to present things as accurately as I can with a fun flair, I'm going to mess up. And that's okay. I hope I've given you a nice place to jump off from on your own adventures into curiosity. Or at the very least, I've given you the key to win your next round of trivia. Hello and welcome to Bewilderbeasts. I'm your host, Melissa McKee-McGrath, recording 515 miles from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And today we are visiting on this Patreon-exclusive, an unusual museum that tells the story of the United States Civil War with 5,000 soldiers. With a twist. Ready? Let's go. Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. You have heard these words before, right? Especially if you've spent more than a cursory look at a history book in the United States. These were the first words in the famous Gettysburg Address by President Abraham Lincoln after the bloodiest battle in the Civil War. This battle solidified the death knell in the Confederacy. Well, so we thought. It turns out the ghosts of the Confederacy are alive and well in 2023. I'm just waiting for 30 states to ban this in history books too. But what's interesting about this speech is that it carries so much weight and heft in history books. Every kid recognizes 4 score and 7 years ago, even before they even know that a score is 20 years. They've heard parodies of this in cartoons or made up their own versions at an all-you-can-eat breakfast. 4 scones and 7 bites to go. This is the definition of an iconic speech. And I don't know about you, but when I hear that speech, I assumed for my entire life that this weighty, heavy, hefty speech that was intended to dedicate the ground where 7,000 men lost their lives, countless more injured or missing, and were forever changed in a world before antibiotics or medicine that was not just alcohol and handsaws, was an hours-long oration. I mean, the freaking president was giving this speech, and I have yet to see a president at a podium give a speech that is less than 35 minutes long. They can say a whole lot without saying nothing at all in some cases, but not this guy. No, the most famous speech in presidential history at the sacred ground in which 7,000 men fell to never stand again under the command of Grant and Lee was the after-party speech. There was a 2-hour speech that was given by orator, pro-speech dude Edward Everett, widely thought to be the best speaker of the day. President Abe Lincoln followed up that speech, which lasted longer than Monsters, Inc., longer than Mad Max Fury Road, and a little movie called Cat People. Honest Abe's speech, the most famous in history, was only 2 minutes long, shorter than the Kentucky Derby race. In fact, after Lincoln's address on the field, Edward 2 Hours Everett wrote, I hope, a shorter letter to the president that said, quote, I wish that I could flatter myself that I had come as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes. On that first day of the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863, a Union soldier was felled by a bullet near, ominously, Cemetery Hill. When he was found by the local pub's daughter, eek, he was holding an ambrotype. This is an old-timey way of photography where an image is taken not on film, but on a glass negative. That glass was pressed onto black backgrounds, which would, with magic, I guess, make the image appear in black and white. Y'all, glass negatives. These images were often put in what the time believed to be fancy, bougie, special, but for today, we'd probably just say it's gaudy or dated. This image in the fallen soldier's hand was of 3 children, but There was no identifying nameplate or jewelry or identification on this man's body. No one knew who he was or who these kids were. Desperate to find the family, the pub owner spoke with a traveling physician. The physician, Dr. John Bournes, went back for the photograph and printed it in northern newspapers. The idea was that the kids in the photo would maybe be recognized and then they would be able to find this man's identity. This was some old-timey CSI business right here, y'all, and it worked. Word got back to the Humiston family in New York about the photo, and because of that technology he was holding at the time of his death, this nameless soldier was given back his name. He was Sergeant Amos Humiston of the 154th New York Infantry. And by tracking movements and interviewing survivors, it was deduced that Sergeant Humiston was positioned behind a picket fence and a brickyard covering a retreat of Union soldiers at Cemetery Hill. It's here that they were attacked by two different Confederate brigades. And while it appears Amos initially escaped, he was mortally wounded. In his dying moments, Amos pulled out the now famous photo of his three children from his pocket and held it. In his last letter home prior to this battle, he had written, quote, "How I want to see them again and their mother is more than I can tell. I hope that we may all live to see each other again." You would think that the story stops here, but it doesn't. His wife, now with three children on her own, was going to need help, and lots of it. Dr. John Bournes decided that he would help in an unusual way, again using the photograph. He sold copies of the picture to raise money to help the kids in the photo with support, along with Sergeant Humiston's widow, Felinda. I'm guessing when Felinda was born, the family probably thought she was going to be a Phil. Definitely going to be a Phil. For sure going to be a Phil. And then come out a Lady Phil. And then they probably tried to scramble and feminize Phil in a very creative manner. Phil-Linda. Not only did Dr. Bournes make enough money from selling these photographs to support the three kids, but he raised enough extra money to support other children of Union soldiers orphaned or left without a parent in the war. Y'all, he started a whole orphanage to help these kids in Gettysburg. 3 years later, Felinda took charge of the orphanage with her own kids and all of the others under the roof, which is both sweet and honestly kind of rough, right? This woman might have had enough on her plate handling three children without a dad. And this could go either way, and I would love to hear her take on this. Was she cool taking on like 130 kids, or was she just like, okay, I'll take on all of these kids? But Felinda had the kids engage with the community and march in parades and be active in town, and all of these things were looking so good for the orphanage. Until Felinda remarried. Good for her! And then she moved with two of her three kids. Never fear, the other was attending college. He wasn't just like left behind because he was her least favorite or something. He went on to do good things. But the new management of the orphanage was awful. And I will spare the details, but in just 9 years after founding the orphanage, things took a turn. The kids started showing up missing in the community. Some went missing completely. Allegations of mistreatment of these kids were rampant through the city. And eventually, after some of the rumors were discovered to be true, the orphanage shut down in 1877, 11 years after the orphanage was established to help kids who were suffering. It took about 26 more years for this building to get a new purpose. In 1903, almost 30 years since the orphanage shut its doors, it became a duplex. But I don't know if chopping up this building that was certainly haunted made people feel good about their living arrangements, so it became a bed and breakfast in 1915. Nearly 100 years later, this orphanage in 2013 found its true spirit, its calling, its ninth life, if you will. This building has been converted into a diorama museum. You know dioramas, the middle school presentation medium of choice. A diorama is, at its crudest, a shoebox or other multi-sided structure with the front wide open so a spectator can peep inside and see a scene. A miniaturized dollhouse could be considered a diorama of sorts, but with maybe more interaction than intended for the art form. You can play with Barbie in her dream house, but you probably shouldn't play with the ones at this museum. Even if you really wanted to. You see, this diorama museum at this historic building in Gettysburg, PA, USA, the seat of the tide turning in the Civil freaking War, is accurate. Is historically correct. Is all cats? Yep, you heard it right. These figures in Confederate and Union uniforms are all cats. Cannons operated by cats. Guns aimed by cats at other cats. Cats who used up lives 1 through 8 are upright, or mostly so on the field, while those who used up their 9th life lay on the mossy ground. If you, like me, are asking, what the what? Then let's get into it. This newest, and I'd say most unharmful to orphans iteration of this historical building is owned, run, and curated by mega cool twin sisters Ruth and Rebecca Brown. They don't just love cats and thought this would be funny. They really truly have a passion for history, storytelling, art, and have a deep, intricate knowledge of the battles of the US Civil War. They also just happen to love claymaking, dioramas, and cats. And they say if you love something, try to make it your life's work. And if you love, like, 10 things, you should definitely mesh them all together. Or something. And that's what they did. But let's take a step back. If I combined chickens, behavior work with animals, podcasting, playing Drunken Sailor on the ukulele, because it really only has 2 chords and it's the only song I can play, and dark beers with a super high alcohol content, and poor timing of autocorrects and texting, I'm quite confident it would not work out at all, professionally speaking, or would it be financially profitable? But somehow, Ruth and Rebecca got super into making their own clay figurines as kiddos, which is like a great little creative outlet. But they also happen to be, as teenage girls, the opposite of what most would consider the target demographic for people interested in Civil War history. I know an 11-year-old boy who is super into battles and war strategy, and the rest are grown-ass men who run around fields in knickers, wool socks, and reenact historical battles. But Rebecca made her dreams come true by purchasing the historical homestead, the former orphanage, and turning it into a historical museum with a twist. All of the soldiers put the Mew in historical museum. I'll see myself out. There's not just one diorama, there are several, each depicting a different battle in the Civil War. And while I applaud their accuracy and storytelling through these dioramas, I'm super disappointed that the Battle for the Ironclads was not renamed Battle of the Iron Cats. But hey, it's important to be accurate. In the Battle of the Ironclads piece, Atlas Obscura describes a view from underneath the water and a peek inside the ship that has cat sailors. Pickett's Charge has almost 2,000 teeny tiny cat soldiers, each handmade by Ruth and Rebecca. The entire scene is 5.5 feet by 7.5 feet long. Y'all, I'm 5'5". This diorama is a whole me deep and a Shaquille O'Neal long. And they didn't just make kitty magic happen. Everything is handmade by these women. Each stone in a stone wall and its history. History loved it some stone walls. But each stone is a tiny ball of clay shaped and formed to fit into the wall. The weapons, the cats, the artillery, the ships, the horses, the cannons. And can I just back up on the horses for a minute? These are not cat horses. That would be a bridge too far. These are real horses, shaped and looking like horses, just the riders are cats. This particular piece was started in the year 2000. Pause for all the millennials to reminisce. In the year 2000. And done. Y'all, they didn't finish this diorama until 2013. It took them 13 years. And they got it done just as the museum was opening its doors. The attention to detail these women put into the pieces is a feat of amazing. The twins have been working diligently on one of the most famous battles of the Civil War, the Battle of Little Round Top. Not only is each soldier cat going to be in as historically accurate a place as it can be, but the degree of research that they're putting in to get the specific topography correct, the hills, the trees, the dips in the land, all of it correct for this piece is intense. And the plan is to have this diorama be 11 feet long. That is longer than a basketball net is tall. And by the end of it, it should have 5,000 individually created kitties in historically correct clothing. Each cat will be under 1 inch tall, hand painted, and if you've ever worked with clay, you know the smaller the pieces, the more likely the rate of explosion in a kiln. And if you haven't played the card game Exploding Kittens, this is my interjection to say, go do that, stat. To divvy up the work equitably, Rebecca makes the Confederate soldiers and Ruth makes the Union soldiers. The amount of time the twins have spent on any one diorama far exceeds the actual reign of the Confederacy, which was only 4 years. But while you can get ghost tours of the area that discusses the Homestead Orphanage and the other theoretically haunted places near these bloody grounds of yesteryear, the only ghosts that I know are real are the ones coming back to ban books, gays, and women's rights. While the reign of the Confederacy turned and eventually ended because of Gettysburg, the ghosts are alive and well in every state that bans progress or people. I think I'll revisit some choice words from my homie Abe Lincoln. Maybe some words in here will resonate. Some of it, yes, sure, it's a lot dated. Okay, I'm not gonna lie. The patriarchal idea that just the fathers brought us to North America, and there's that little bit in there that there were people already here who were doing just fine until we colonizers showed up and continued to do them dirty. All right, it's not a perfect speech, but in these words, in this speech, I wonder if you'll get the message that he was trying to say. The piece of it that stands the test of time through all 9 of our country's lives. quote, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who were here to give their lives, that this nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task of remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave their last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Meow. So thank you, Patreons, for supporting this show. This is your June episode, and we are back on track for the rest of the year after a computer malfunction in May and an end-of-the-year shenanigans for a kiddo's school. I have a few stories that will fit well over here in the Patreon land, in the Patreon feed, and I am excited to bring them to you. If you did have a story you want me to tell, or you find a silly clip on the internet like my friend Lydia did, hi Lydia, go ahead, email it to bewilderbeastpod@gmail.com or use the handy-dandy message button in Patreon to go directly to my inbox. I will see it. I may not get a chance to respond, but I do read everything and I love hearing from you. And if you have an idea, please pop it in there. There are only a few more months left of Bewilderbeast, so now is the time to get those story ideas in, and I want to hear what you want to hear about. And with that, I'm Melissa McHugh McGrath with Mudstuff Media and the Podfix Network. Now go get curious. I got today's information from my friend Lydia, what's up, who sent a TikTok about the Civil War Cat Museum, which is actually called Civil War Tales, the cat tale version, not the storybook version. And God, I love a good placed pun. Education.nationalgeographic.org, civilwartales.com, YouTube.com, which I will link in a separate piece, the YouTube video on the Civil War Cat Museum, so that way you guys will see that in the Patreon feed coming up soon, WashingtonPost.com, CivilWarTales.com. Again, just because it was a really useful thing, and I think I probably put the link in here twice, AtlasObscura.com. The National Soldiers Orphans Homestead, NPS.gov on Gettysburg, and the full text of the Gettysburg Address took up less space on a page than my fifth grader's five-paragraph essay. That is located at loc.gov. Intro and outro is Tiptoe Out the Back by Dan Leibowitz. Interstitial music is by MK2, and extra music and sound effects is by Pixabay and freesound.org. And if you feel so moved, and I hope you do, my former district elected some people to the school board who want to remove books from libraries, and I vehemently disagree with that notion. All books might not be great or your cup of tea, but that's the very basis of freedom of speech. It's one of those foundational stones that our democracy, the very thing Abe Lincoln was talking about. So without that, without our voices, the voices of the people, by the people, for the people, we fall. So if there is a way you can get active locally, not just liking a Facebook post or saying something to a friend at lunch, but really showing up and getting active locally to stop some of these big dominoes falling in your town, district, state, and nation. Step up. At the very least, show up and vote. In our little town of 20,000 people, less than 2,000 people showed up to vote last week. That's abysmal. That is super pathetic. We can and must do better. So go get your sticker and fill in some bubbles, get involved, and get someone else to get involved too. You got this. Stay curious, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.